Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to the world's longest running football fans podcast from CelticUnderground.net.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter.
Our guest today has a special place in the hearts of those of us who felt that Dr. Joe Venglos was exceptionally unfairly treated by our media, who sought to hound him out during his 12-month tenure. It's a guy who only played three games for Celtic, and you might be thinking, hey, only three games for Celtic and he's on the Celtic Underground podcast. But of those three games, one of them was exceptionally important. It was the 5-1 game. Our guest is Mr. Tony Warner. The 5-1 game was so important because, one, at the time it stopped us going 13 or 16 points behind Rangers, can't remember exactly, but also it saw the arrival of Lubomir Radcic and shut up idiots who've managed to create a media career for themselves when they obviously know hee-haw about football like Keevans. It also saw the arrival of Mjalby, who very quickly into that game put George Albert's up in the air, and he had to be substituted because he'd gone anonymous. But it was just an all-round fantastic day that day, and Tony Warner played a fantastic part in it. And as you will hear from this clip coming up, it's quite a good podcast. Bring me
sunshine in your... And this absolute unit come walking over with a bottle. It was a bottle of champagne. I went, Tony Warner, and yeah, it went 5-1, and just put the bottle down and walked off. And it was a bottle of champagne, and the lads were going, what's going on there? I went, oh, they played in a game last year for Celtic and beat Rangers 5-1, and obviously he's a Celtic fan. And then he just walked away and was gone into the smoke and never to be seen again. Through the years, never bring me
any tears. Let your arms be as warm. So I know I had trailed that the podcast after the Mark Cooper one would be about the 1986 anniversary and the author of a book into that, but that's coming up next week. We've inserted the Tony Warner one. I hope you enjoy it. The Celtic FC Foundation, as you know, are having an evening to celebrate the 30th anniversary of the famous 1986 snatching of the league title away from the Jam Tarts, and I think there's still some spaces about that, so get on to Celtic FC Foundation for that. Meantime, we've got a cup semi-final coming up, so enjoy this podcast with Tony Warner. I'm sure you will. And this is me, Harry Brady, with him, Tony Warner. Arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love. Hey. So I am joined by Tony Warner. So Tony, how are you doing?
I'm very good. I'm sound. Thanks for having me.
No, that's not a problem. One of the reasons for having you, which we'll touch on in a moment, is you played for Celtic briefly in a game against a former club called Rangers, and we have a game coming up against a new version of Rangers. So
right.
I was going to ask you about playing in that, but before we get into that part of your career, you've had an interesting career in terms of the number of clubs you were at. How many is it total? Because I've tried to look through. Is it 18 you played for?
Yeah, I think it's about that. I'll take your word for that, Tony, instead of me standing here with get my fingers out and counting them up. But yeah, about that. Yeah, I mean, a lot of them are loans, which, you know, which I think you find with goalkeepers, because you can always kind of kind of cobble like a left winger or a midfielder into a left back position, say, or you can push them in and around the field. But a goalkeeper, when there's a couple of goalkeepers down, you just need to go and get someone. And sometimes it can be a game or two, three games, and then you have to kind of, your man's back. But it's something which you need a definite specific goalkeeper. So yeah, a lot of my clubs that I've been at have been loans. But don't regret any of them. It's all experience. It's all kind of getting out of the situation you're in, off the bench or not playing, and getting some game time. So there's been quite a few. Yeah,
because you're right. I mean, I suppose the one of the hardest positions to break into a team is goalkeeper, particularly a young keeper, because unless there's some massive break of luck of massive or some, you're the greatest young goalkeeper that club's ever had going through its systems.
Yeah.
Even if the goalkeeper, if the first team goalkeeper gets injured, I would imagine managers would be loath, particularly you were at Liverpool, managers are loath to chuck in a 20, 21, 22-year-old and are more likely to go and try and find an experienced guy to replace the keeper they've got.
Yeah, I think that's the case. At these big clubs, it's very hard. I mean, like, I remember there was I went in when I was 20. I signed a pro contract when I was 20, so I was kind of... I was catching up as it was. And then the time, like when I was kind of, say, I don't know, 22, 23, when you would probably expect lads to kind of push on and be making a name for themselves or, a definitive season. That's like when David James got his debut for England. Yeah. So David James, you sign and maybe push on as best you can, but David James was actually pushing on himself and getting England cap. So, he's not really in a position to go, well, we're going to drop you for this young lad. And, JMO got highlighted for a lot of, not a lot of, maybe the mistakes he made within, like, kind of highlight, high-profile games. And he got heavily criticised unfairly, I think, to the point where just anything he'd done would be really exposed. Now, I think if you looked through the leagues, the Premier League, say, the people make mistakes week in, week out, but they just wouldn't get highlighted. But JMO kind of, they got over him, they wouldn't let go of him, and he gave him a lot of stick. But even though he was kind of getting criticised a lot, Roy Evans still, didn't think it was right to put me in. And, that was his decision, rightly or wrongly, probably rightly, I don't know. I mean, you always want your opportunity to get in and prove yourself. But JMO was a very good goalkeeper. So, I've got no axe to grind there.
Yeah, and... I remember hearing, you tell me if this is likely to be true or not, I remember hearing it was Alan Shearer talking about David James, and one way that he used to distract him was, David James was such a nice guy, was his point,
that
you'd be lining up at a corner kick and Shearer would start saying to him, how's the family, how's life, and because David James was such a nice guy, he would engage in the conversation briefly. The corner would come in and you distracted him enough just for that second for something to happen that he would then look like he'd made a mistake because he'd lost concentration just for a second.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I could see Shearer doing that because he's not soft. He's been around the block a few times. JMO was a nice guy. So they might have been England teammates at one point. So, yeah, JMO was probably seen as just them being nice. But Shearer obviously had an ulterior motive to just distract them for that split second. Whatever happens there when the call gets winged in and JMO's talking about getting the pictures of his kids out of his shorts to show Shearer, the grandkids or whatever. I've heard that one before. It's interesting. I'll have to ask JMO next time I see him.
So you, obviously from your accent, you're from the city. Were you a Liverpool fan?
No, I was Everton fan when I was growing up.
Right, okay.
Yeah, my dad was a Liverpool fan. But all my mum's brothers and a lot of my mum's family were Everton fans. So I'd be round at their houses all the time and they'd be kind of, just drilling Everton into me all the time. So yeah, I grew up an Everton fan, but I think my dad realised he kind of lost me to the other side. And then it was just like when I got called off Liverpool, like when I was 18, just asked me to come in so they could have a look at me because they let a lad go. And then you kind of, once you're in it, and you're involved in it, and the length of time I was there, I was there for probably about 6.5 years from the first phone call to when I left. I was signed on for 5 years. When you're in and around some of them players and you're in and around the club, it's hard not to get your head turned on it. And there's a lot of players who were Everton fans, admittedly, as youngsters who are actual Liverpool legends now. There's a lot of them, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not put myself on a bracket, but, just being in and around plays and being in and around some of the staff who've seen it all and done it all, it's difficult not to kind of get drawn in and change allegiance, I suppose.
And you see you're in and around. I'm sure I read somewhere that you were on the bench, was it 120 times or something for Liverpool? So you were in and around the fringes of the first team because you were on the bench that amount of times.
Yeah, you're getting around, you know, you're kind of with, like, Ronnie Moran, who's you know, was there when he won all the European Cups. You're with Sammy Lee, who's your reserve manager, who's won two European Cups. You know, there's a lot of experience and a lot of history around you. And you know, I'm not talking about steeped in the club. I'm talking about people who you're having dinner with and you're getting the balls in with or you're training with and stuff. You know, there's a lot of history there. And to, you know, it's just, for me, it was just kind of a natural thing, you know, because I think what happens is then you're on the bench, you're playing against Everton, and everybody get geared up for the game, and you know, it's a derby day and it's kind of hotly contested, and you know, the fans are getting on your case because you're sitting on the bench or you're warming up and they're giving you dogs abuse and all that, which is, you know, part of the course, I suppose. But then you play like the mini derbies, which are the reserve games, and you're right off for sticking her up Everton. And you're playing the A and the B team games, and they're just the same. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, you've got the badge on your chest, and you don't, you know, no quarter asked and none given, really. So, you know, you just want to be winning for Liverpool because you're up against your biggest rivals, and when you have enough of that going on about you,
yep,
you end up just kind of turning, I suppose. I mean, like, you know, I think like Carragher was the one I know the most about is Carragher. I think he, even when he was about 18 or so, I think he still had the season ticket for Everton,
right. I'm led
to believe. So he'd go and watch Liverpool games at home because he'd have to, as like a young pro. But then he'd have a season ticket and he'd go and watch the Blues. Do you know what I mean? But, you know, try and tell Carragher, he's an Everton fan now. You know, you'd be there for a long time, I think.
No, so I can understand that. So and so you're sitting there as understudy to David James. And I think the first place you went away on loan, so your first team football, was at Swindon?
That's right, yeah.
How did you get on there?
Yeah, it was all right. It was just nice to get your debut out the way. I think we beat Bradford 1-0, and that put us like top of the table, actually top of the championship, which was really nice. But it was just nice because I think I was probably getting on for 22-23 then, and you're just thinking it's got to come soon because you can't be like 24-25 and not play the game because you're just not a footy player then. You're just kind of you're conning everyone, know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that was good, and again that was just brief. Because the goalkeeper come back after a couple of games, so but it was nice to kind of just to shake that monkey off your back and just kind of finally get a first team appearance, which was good.
So you then go back to Liverpool, back on the bench, and then from our perspective here, you then get a call to go on loan to Celtic. How did that come about?
Well, I come into training on a Friday morning. In fact, I'll tell you something strange. Like in the week, it was like on a Tuesday or something. Me and David James are sitting there, and I'm going, "I've got that poster on my wall there. No, the one with there is Johnny. No, like with Jack Nicholson. No, coming through the door when he's in the Shining."
Yes, uh-huh.
And David James was like banging to Sven Feiren, right? So David James goes, "Oh, bad idea, that, you know, like, you know, the vibes in your house coming out of that picture, they're not good." So she's going, "I'd take it down if I was you. It's not good." So I'm thinking, "All right, okay, fair enough. So he goes home and takes this posters out. Next minute, goes into work on the Friday, and Brad Friedel pulls me to one side and he goes, "Listen," he goes, "you're going to get pulled in the office in about 5 minutes. He said, "Celtic want you on loan, and there's an you're playing tomorrow, and there's an Old Firm game next week, which we'll definitely be playing in if you want to go." So I'm thinking, right, these are the games. These are the games you've got to be prepared to get involved in,
yep,
if you want to be a footy player. So I'm thinking, God, I'll say what, definitely worth that, bringing that poster down. I wish I'd have brought it down years before. So then I goes and sits down as I'm getting changed. Roy Evans calls me in, and then he just kind of, I knew what was coming, but he just explained about Celtic, and he said, "Look," he said, "they want you up there now. So, you know, if you want to do it, get your boots." And he said, "There's an Old Firm game next week, which you're going to be playing in. So get your gear and get up there." And it is like your contact details, you know, Eric Black, I think it was. So off your pop. So, yeah, walked in, thanked Brad, because I think it was Brad's agent who organised it, or who put my name forward. So, yeah, rushed in, got my boots, got my gear, and I was on the motorway up to Glasgow in about an hour or so.
Right. Yeah, because Brad Friedel had been at Celtic briefly.
He had. thankfully, I don't know if it was him or what, but I know it was his agent who threw me name in and just said, you know, that might be a good one for you to go for. So, you know, I've got to thank him for that.
But if it was also brief and you're leaving in an hour,
yeah,
you would have had no idea of anything to do with what was going on, apart from obviously you knew you were going to be playing in this game against Rangers after the next game you were playing, but you wouldn't have had any idea of, at that point, there's a bit of discontent with Celtic being whatever it was, 10, 13 points behind Rangers, and Joseph Venglos getting criticised in the press and things like that. You'd have been oblivious to all of that.
Yeah, totally oblivious to it all, just drive on the moment's way, and then what you do is just kind of have your, I drove into Parkhead, met Eric Black, and that was it. Yeah, just kind of get your hotel arrangements and stuff. You know, it's kind of, it's not really like today where you've got Twitter and things and, mobiles and that. You can kind of find out what's going on in the club. You just like, right, I'm going to Celtic, and that's it. And then, I might not even have known the points difference until I got there. Do you know what I mean? I probably didn't even know that. Because you're running home, you're grabbing things, you're throwing things in bags and then fill up the car and just hitting the motorway, and that's that.
So your first game for us, you played away at St Johnstone.
That's right.
And we lost. How did you play? The other thing is, a goalkeeper should be, I believe, a goal, and you, I don't know what your thoughts, a goalkeeper needs to be in charge of his defence.
Yeah.
You don't know these people because you've never met them until virtually the day of the game. So how was your debut on that?
It was McDermott Park, wasn't it?
That's right.
Yeah, I remember meeting everybody the day of the game. And then I remember Peter Latchford, the goalie coach, he pulled me to one side and he said to me, right, he said, I'm telling you now, he said, watch out for that Stefan Mache. I said, because he will give you a fire and forget back pass under pressure. He'll put you under the cosh. So he said, watch it, you know what I mean? He said, because he'll stick it around your neck and all that as a back pass. But basically, they just kind of try and give you the heads up on who everybody is and the strengths and the weaknesses and stuff and that's that. And I think, like, the hardest thing is you've always, basically, I think as a goalkeeper, because every goalkeeper's had to do it. You get thrown in with new players and that's just the way it is. And you think, right, the best thing to do is just work out your back four, name-wise. So at least they're the ones you're going to be talking to all the time. But then a lot of times, hey, you and all that, you know what I mean? Because you forget the names at the moment. But yeah, I remember I think we went 1-0 down and then we went to 1-1. And then I think, right, okay, I've got it back. Hopefully Celtic we'll turn it round and that, because it's a strong side. And then Vidar Iseth just knocked this ball across the area like I've never seen before. He was coming from the left-hand side and I kind of goes to the left-hand post and he just goes to square it. I think he just goes to smash it out to the right wing, but he just nails it across the area. And I'm out of position because I'm kind of standing there wondering whether he's going to give a back pass to me. Unless he knocks it across, he doesn't hit it true. And I think it either goes head height or like waist height. And some lads standing there and just volleys in the empty net. And it's 2-1. And I remember looking at him thinking, what was that? What do you mean? Like, what are you doing? And then it was like it was 2-1. And then they held on. And then we got beat. And I'm thinking, fucking hell. I didn't expect it to be like this. But it was just one of them. It was one of them things, It was just one of them things. And maybe it was something which had maybe been going on for a while before I got there, because you'd fully expect Celtic to get a victory there, but doesn't always pan out that way.
So then, following that, because at least there was another Liverpudlian in the team who was an Evertonian and Alan Stubbs. So at least there was somebody who might have sounded like a friendly voice when you arrived. But you then had a week to get to know the players in the run-up to playing the former Rangers. How was that week going? I actually said to somebody on Twitter, I'm speaking to yourself, can any questions? And somebody said, yeah, ask him if the players were shitting it as much as we were.
I just got the sense that it was an old firm game. And there's always tensions leading up to it, within the team, I suppose, because nobody, was kind of bragging rights in it. And then I realised that it was going to be, if Rangers would have won, it would have been kind of took them far and away from it, trying to reel them in. So I kind of did realise that. The I didn't sense that the players were shitting themselves. You know, they're just kind of more professional, aren't they? You very rarely see a player standing there panicking. Yeah. You know, I've seen it once or twice in that, but you know, very rarely do you see it. But I just remember from my experience, I remember kind of reading a few papers, and it was like on a Tuesday or something. I remember like getting a couple of the papers, and it was going, "Oh, Celtic have got Liverpool's fourth choice keeper." And I'm thinking, God, I'm not even fourth choice. I'm third choice. I'm thinking I remember that's one thing that grated with me. I thought, you can't even get that right. But then it was like, you know, inexperienced, what are Celtic doing, blah, blah, blah. And then he had this stuff about, you know, Celtic not performing and stuff, and Rangers are going to run away with it and blah, blah, blah. So then I remember actually making a conscious decision not to read another paper. And that was like on a Tuesday. I thought, right, I'm not reading, not now. Because basically, you sit there, you read these papers. There's not one bit of good news there. So you just read it to kind of depress yourself or put yourself under the cosh again. So I thought, right, I'm not going to read another paper all week. I'm just going to just get on with what I need to get on with, and that's me. So that was that.
Because that was a good thing. Because at that time, Joseph Venglos was being slaughtered by the papers as being some diddery old man who didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah.
We'd been heavily criticised for signing Lubomir Marachik for £300,000.
Yeah.
Because who was this Pastic guy?
Yeah.
We had a fourth choice goalkeeper from Liverpool in yourself, as you say.
Yeah.
And we just signed Johan Mjalby, who made his debut.
That's right.
In that game. So, yeah, in typical, obviously we're paranoid about this type of thing, but in typical Scottish media fashion, it was the end is nigh for Celtic because they're rubbish.
Yeah. I can well believe that, like, looking at it now. I mean, you know, Johan Mjalby, he was a Swedish international. And then, you know, Lubo Mravcic, you know, I'd seen enough of him early on to realise he was some player. I mean, you know, like that was kind of that was a bit premature. That's shout one about Lubo, because yeah, what a player he is, he was unreal. He was unreal. But yeah, leading up to that week, well, you know, I remember just not getting on the paper, so I thought, right, I'm going to leave it. And then he took us up to a hotel by Loch Ness or by Loch Lomond.
Loch Lomond, it would have been Cameron House Hotel,
yeah.
Loch Lomond.
Yeah. Yeah, they took us up there. And funny enough, I remember getting a phone call off. It will have been either Rob Jones or Mark Wright. And I think that, you know, they were obviously playing whoever they were playing, Liverpool. So they've kind of gone, all right, he's playing. So, you know, thankfully, and you know, nice of them, they phoned me. And then Rob Jones, I went, oh, listen, mate, all the best, you know, kind of just, you know, do really well. And Mark Wright said the same. So I'm like, oh, yeah, mate. So I remember being just Cameron House, getting a phone call, receiving a phone call off, and I thought, oh, that's nice. And then Robbie Fowler come on, and he went, oh, you get fucking battered. It's a bit heavy, innit? He goes, nah, mate, it's Rangers, innit? He goes, I'm Rangers, mate. He goes, I used to get canes. I'm thinking, cheers, mate, fucking knees are knocking here. And, like, you know, I'm getting soothed a little bit by Rob Jones and by Mark Wright, and you just come in and just blow it all away without me getting canes. So that was that. So I thought, right, okay, you know, there's passion going on about this game up and down the country and over the world. Big game, do you know what I mean? And then I actually remember there was a fitness coach there called Jim. He was a big guy. I think he was an ex-doorman or something, like a karate expert. But he was a real good guy. And he said to me, he said, mate, he said, and, you know, he wasn't kind of trying to put me under pressure or nothing, but he was just kind of trying to let me know the gravitas of the game. He said, these games make and break people. He said, I've seen people, like, melt under the conditions of this game, and they've never to be seen again. He said, so, you know, not to try and put you under the cosh, but this game's important. Right, okay, I understand that, fully aware of that. And then, yeah, come back down, and, yeah, all went well.
So, yeah, you go into that game, and as a Celtic fan, one of the things that we remember, there was a player called George Alberts who played for Rangers who'd bossed previous games.
Oh, yeah.
And inside the first 10 minutes, you know how they say in games like that, you can get away with something inside the first 5-10 minutes?
Referee. Yeah.
So Johan Mjalby put George Alberts up in the air.
Yeah.
And he disappeared for the rest of the game.
Yeah, yeah. Cause the thing I remember, like, they made me aware of George Alberts. He had some shot on him, didn't he?
Yeah.
He'd be shooting from, like, 35 yards and just, like, destroying goalies and that. So I can remember I think he had the free kick, actually. I haven't seen the game for years, and it's strange because I can't really remember much of it. I remember little bits of it, but I can't remember much of it because, you know, I haven't really watched it. But it was one of those things I think was really so intense. When it's over, it's like, I can't remember nothing about it.
Yeah.
But I think he had a shot, and I think I remember seeing him line one up and thinking, oh, here we go. This is like the George Albert time, you know what I mean? He was either him or Stephen Gavash, but I remember like just thinking, all right, like I need to be on my toes here. But yeah, George Albert, I remember like them kind of telling me all the time, you've got to be aware of him, got to be, because he will shoot from anywhere. So like, you know, don't be switching off even from distance. Johan clattered them. And the thing that you've got to remember as well, I think in these games is, you know, you're always kind of a little bit worried about what they're going to produce, but they're also as worried about you as well. It's not like as if kind of, you know, you're outnumbered and, you know, it's 10 on 1 and all that. You know, they're going to be going to Parkhead and don't want to get turned over here. So, I mean, it's all sweetness of life for them.
You're saying you don't remember much of the game. I mean, I can remember you having some half-decent saves when it was still 1-0 to Celtic.
Yeah.
I think you had a really good save. I think Kanchelskis had some... Andre Kanchelskis had an effort that you had a really good save. Did that sort of settle your nerves getting involved in the game pretty early?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. I mean, like, any keeper will tell you that, you know what I mean? To get your hands on the ball or to just do something right is really beneficial if you can, you know what I mean? You get the opportunity to do that because you just think, you know, I don't want this first shot to come in, it wobbles underneath me or it goes through my hands or something happens and it ends up in the back of the net and all eyes are on you and then, you know, the kind of something else happens on top of that. So, yeah, to get a save out the way nice and early is really good, really important. It does, it settles your nerves because, you know, it was a big atmosphere for me, that. Do you know what I mean? It's the most I've played in front of, like, just by a massive, massive margin. And the one thing I remember was there was times where I couldn't even hear myself think, it was that loud. I remember just being like, wow, this is so loud. I remember having to really scream at Alan Stubbs, and he wasn't even that far away from me. And it was just so loud, like where your ears were ringing. It was like amplified. It was like reverberating and all that. I remember thinking, God, how loud is this? So, you know, just them kind of things which are on top of you. But, you know, as it panned out, they're all just like kind of really good memories now. The way it's all turned out.
You know, one of the things I've often wondered about these types of things as well is, and you're saying about your vague memories because it all just passes so quickly. What are the pre-match and half-time team talks like? Do they make any impact at all in a game of that stature?
No, I don't think so. You know, it's kind of a bit of a cliche in that, but if you can't go for them games, there's something wrong with you. I think maybe just in the pre, the team talks at half-time and before the game, you know, tactically say, you know, if you've got a game plan or a tactic, you know, kind of that kind of gets put out in positions for corners and free kicks and stuff. So, you know, they have to be adhered to. But as far as kind of like motivational speeches and things, you know, I think people are pretty much zoned out, you know, the kind of, you know, the really, actually zoned out the wrong word, like, you know, probably like dialed in to wanting to beat them. And also, you just don't want to be making that one mistake, do you? Because it just gets highlighted forever. You know, if you're making a mistake against St Johnstone away at McDermott Park the week before, you know, nobody will really remember this so much. But if you start making mistakes in all firm games, you know, you're just kind of remembered, I should imagine. So, or, you know, any big game, but don't really get much bigger than that. But you know what I'm saying? So,
yeah, yeah.
So you want to make sure that you do your job and stop the other fella doing his job. And you just want to win. It's all about winning in them games. You just don't want to get beat. Do you know what I mean? You just do not want to get beat because you don't want that bragging night. It's all about when they're walking off and they're all high-fiving and laughing and joking. You're just like, fucking hell. Got to just been out off there. Do you know what I mean? There's nothing worse. So, yeah, you don't really need any kind of encouragement for these games.
So training must have been good the following week. You must have all been pretty much on a high after that.
Yeah, pretty much. I remember him saying before the game, like, you're not allowed out in town afterwards. Just you can't do not on the shows, you know, because like win, lose or draw, you can something can happen to you, or not something can happen to us, you know, it's heightened on that particular day. So remember that. Remember getting told that. So then the next time like, I kind of seen all the lads, because we were trying to get generally go out on a Saturday, but next time I seen all the lads was on the Monday. And yeah, you know, everyone was made up, you know, the gap had been closed. It was such a good win as well. Such a big win, you know, kind of like quite historical because they hadn't won by a margin like that for years.
No, we'd been beaten by Rangers how many years earlier would it have been? Almost 10 years earlier, 5-1. So right. It was pretty good to have a 5-1 back the other way.
Yeah, exactly. The minute image of it. The next week in Salem was great. Everyone was made up and thinking, right, okay, you know, this could be the, you know, this could be the catalyst where you do a little bit of a springboard where you start kind of trying to reel them in.
And then your last game for Celtic was the following week. Was it a 2-0 victory?
Yeah, against Motherwell.
Against Motherwell, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
And then you were away. I mean, was it only ever going to be for 2-3 games? Did you have the chance to stay for longer? What was the circumstance of going back?
Yeah, well, what happened was Gouldie got fit, and then Joe said to me, and Wenger said to me, what did he say? He was something about sitting on the bench. I think he was going to put, he said, I'm going to put Andy McConaughey back on the bench. But I think he said, for the Old Firm games, or any Old Firm game, I will put you back on the bench. I'll let you go on the bench for that one. And I was like, right, okay. So for me, it was probably better, you know, it was better to be at that point up at Celtic with a possible opportunity of getting something than maybe going back to Liverpool and like letting the season fizzle out, you know. Well, one thing I do remember was Roy Evans said to me at the beginning of the season, he said, like, if you find yourself a club, we won't stay in your way. We won't stand in your way. You know, we won't kind of have any compensation or like fee for you. But, you know, kind of, you know, Brad Friedel had joined at that point. So he was going, you know, it'd be better for you to move on in a nice possible way. And he said, but we won't stand in your way. So what happened was, that was the beginning of the season. So it was, I think it was November I went to Celtic.
Yeah.
I think the loan ended, and then I re-signed, and then I've re-signed up until I think like the January or something. So yeah, because I remember being there for New Year. So then I remember speaking, my agent spoke to Celtic, and he was going, well, you can have them for free. And they're going, right, okay, sounds good, something we'd be very interested in. So then at this point, Roy Evans had been let go by Liverpool.
Right.
So you know, it was actually a bit of a, he pulled me in his office and he said it to me, so then I've not in writing. So we'd been let go, so it was just the club and Julier. And then I was going, well, you can have me for nothing. And then when they contacted the club said they wanted so having many hundred grand for me and a 50% sell-on. And then Celtic were going, well, no, that's kind of not the deal that you said it was. And I'm like, I'm like, well, you know, Roy Evans said I could go for free. And I go, well, you know, we never said that. So it kind of, it fell down. And then I went on loan to Aberdeen.
That's right. Yeah, you had six games at Aberdeen.
Six games, yeah. It was a strange on Aberdeen as well because I was on the map, so that's why Aberdeen come in for me. But before that, it was like about 6 weeks before, I was supposed to go on a trial at Hibs. Mm-hmm. And when I was getting my gear ready in the house, and I was running up the stairs, and the doorbell went, and I turned on the stairs, and I slipped and fell, and I'd done a ligament to my ankle. I come flying down the stairs, done my ankle in, and believe it or not, true story, it was Jehovah's Witness at the door. True story. And my dad's opened up the door, and the fella's gone, oh, you know, I want to speak to you about like the light and all that. So my dad told him where to go. But I'm lying behind the door, like screaming with my ankle in my hand. So I've had to drive into training, got, you know, he put me off for 6 weeks, but what happened was Aberdeen said, well, we want him, and he said we'll sign him on the last day, like before the transfer window closed on the loan. But I was still injured, and he said when he's fit, we'll have him. Do you know what I mean? At least we've got him as our player. And then when he wants me to go up, I just wasn't fit. I hadn't had enough practice training, and it kind of showed in the games. Like it was my first injury, and you think you're okay.
Yeah.
But then when it comes to actually, you know, the sharp ends of your performances, I just wasn't quite there. And I remember, I think we, I think we played four games at home. The two away games were Celtic and Rangers. And they were sitting around the relegation zone. And I can remember the fans was giving us dogs abuse. We were just getting hammered all the time. Mm-hmm. I think out of the six games we drew one, which was, I think, St Johnston. And I can remember, I'm pretty sure it was late on in the game, and a ball come to me, and I went to catch it, and I dropped it, and I can just remember hearing the screams around Pataudry. Like, no, because he thought, like, this could be, are we going to get a point here? This could be, like, the thing that puts a nail in that coffin. I can just remember hearing the screams and diving back on the ball and thinking, God, say what, if that had gone in, I don't think I'd have made it out alive. So went up there, and then that was the end of the Scottish journey, really, when I finished the season up there. And luckily enough, Aberdeen, we managed to stay up, so that was all right in the end.
I mean, I do your comment there about the Aberdeen fans, it is one of the things, in my more enlightened moments as a fan, I do sometimes think, nobody intends to make a mistake.
No, you don't. But like, you know, even being a coach now, you look at it and you think, what are you doing there? So, I mean, what are you doing? How come? Because what it was is basically the ball, and it wasn't even a hard shot. It wasn't even a shot. It was like a through ball, which the fella couldn't get onto. It was overcooked. And it come to me, and I've just kind of bent down to pick it up. All it was a pick up, and I dropped it. And then the forward come riding on me. I remember just, like, I think myself, I think I kicked in the face here, but I'm not. I don't care. I remember just diving on it with everything. I remember as it come up my hands, I can just remember the screams, like the gasps and all kinds coming from every corner of the ground. It was football for you,
And so after Aberdeen, you then ended up going to Millwall, which was your club of your career.
Yeah, definitely.
So how did you end up at Millwall, and what were your highlights of Millwall?
My agents had kind of tried to get me to Millwall, I think, the season before, and for one reason or another, it didn't happen. So then, I remember going away on holiday, and he had a couple of trials lined up. He said, you can have a trial at Millwall and at Bury. So I'm right, okay. So I went to Millwall. Luckily enough, my uncle and lived just around the corner from the training ground, so he had someone to kind of be around and bounce around, and that was good. So I had the friendly face down there. But I went into Millwall, and just straight away, you could see it was right. It was like, you know, to like the play, you know, like young Stephen Reid there, young Paul Eiffel, young Timmy Cahill, young Neil Larris, and just the lads were great lads. There were a lot of young lads there, but they had a few experienced pros and that, and the blend was perfect. Everybody was like, it was just fizzing and popping. I really enjoyed it. So we had a couple of, trial games and stuff. Uh-huh. And do think there's another couple of keepers there. Thankfully, I've seen them off. But one thing I remember it was a pre-season game, and it was just on the training ground. We played Spurs, and Spurs brought everyone down. Like, every first team player played on the training ground, and we couldn't believe it. Like, Les Ferdinand there, and Dan Anderton, no way, like, shit. Was Sheringham there? Sheringham might have been, I'm not too sure, but like, it was just every player.
That team you may have been, yeah.
Yeah, it was just everyone was there, like Ian Walker playing on Millwall Singer. So I played in the game, and we got beat 2-0. And then as we were walking off, like someone said to me, I think they're going to kind of make an offer and stuff. So then I had the trial lined up for Bury a couple of days later. And I thought, right, okay. I said to the manager, like, well, okay, what's happening? He goes, oh, well, you know, the chairman's going to, you know, he's going to speak to him in a few days and all that. And I said, right, okay, well, I'm off to Bury then. And he just panicked. He goes, what? He goes, no, you can't go. And I was going, well, you said I was here for like a week, and then you can let me know, like on, say, the Friday, say. And I've got a trial lined up with Bury now. So if you're not here today, I'm going up to Bury tomorrow, and that's that. So I went to Bury, and then Millwall phoned me. And I remember going to Bury, and it just wasn't the same. They'd been relegated from, like, the Championship, as it, you know, as it is now, to Div 1. And we were training on the park, and it was like, you know, there was a bit of discourse with the club because they'd just been relegated and stuff. And it was a million miles away from Millwall at the time. And then the Millwall manager phoned me, or my agent, and said, like, get him back down here. Because he said he didn't want to let the chairman know, because he said, oh, if the chairman finds out, he won't have your back. So I went back down, and then train like for another few days, and we thrashed out the deal, and that was that. But yeah, I'll be honest, yeah, like it was the best stage of my career was at Millwall. I know, because obviously that's where I played the most games.
Yeah.
I was the most established in that, but talk about enjoying my football, I'd say, what, like, it was... There's lads who've gone through the career, I reckon, they won't have felt what we felt there. I know that's a bit kind of dreamy and that, but it was true. Like, the lads were just absolutely brilliant. I was going to say,
was it the teammates? Was it the management? Was it the style of play? What was it that made it, or was it a combination of all these bits and pieces?
It was a combination of everything. Like, everything just kind of fitted together, you know, like, really good lads. Lads who backed themselves against anybody. You know, like, you'd be playing, like, you know, playing, like, you know, decent teams and stuff. I know we were in, like, Div 1 at the time. But just the players we had, they were just, like, really good players. And then, like there was a sprinkling of older, experienced pros. The management were good. It was, like, Keith Stevens and Alan McCleary. They were, like, two, like, old Millwall veterans. And then also, as well, playing in front of the Millwall crowd. It was brilliant. It was just what I really liked. Because they were aggressive. They were vocal. You know, they just give anyone stick who turned up at the ground. Opposite teams would be getting barracked non-stop, and it was kind of like a bit of a renegade crew. Do you know what I mean? It was manic at times.
Yeah.
But I loved all that. It was really good. And you know, they were passionate and always felt like they were the underdogs and stuff. And that was great. I loved it. And then, signed a deal, and like the rest is history, really. I mean, we got to the playoffs that season and got beat by Wigan. And then the next season, we won the league. So, you know, I can remember speaking to Sean Dyche, actually, because me and Dyche signed on at the same time. Mm-hmm. But in the first, like, in pre-season, Dyche had a dodgy back and he had to have an operation on his back. So that put pay to his first season there. But Sean Dyche, as you see now on the telly, is very similar to how he was there. Always dead straight, like, not kind of too... if things are going well, he'd stay very level, you know what I mean? He wouldn't get carried away with things, he wouldn't get too down about things. I remember he came to me after the Wigan game, he said, "You just had a big season here, you know." He said, "You have had the big season." And he was still a player, you know what I mean? But he was talking to like a manager or a coach. And I was thinking, yeah, you know, it's your first season here, you got to the playoffs, you know, you kind of, you know, when you have a little look at what you've done, you think, yeah, you know, it's good that. But fell short, so really disappointed. And then I've spoken to Dyche like many times since a pair of us have left Millwall, and he's kind of said, we did realise at the time, he said, but you know, we were very, very lucky there to be at that club at that time, like very lucky, because just the camaraderie and that, like, there's lads who, like I said, who were going out throughout the whole career and we've just been at a club kind of half like struggling on, half kind of had a little bit of a good spell, struggled on somewhere else. And then look back at the career, 200-400 games, going, yeah, it was all right and that. But that Millwall spell, that 5 years there was unbelievable. It was just unbelievable for the morale. It was great. And I remember Ray Arford coming. McGee brought Ray Arford in, and he was absolutely superb. His training sessions, he'd have you running through brick walls for him, do you know what I mean? And
yeah,
he'd have you doing it gladly. I remember he kind of, you know, just sitting having a cup of tea one day. And he said, "This is." I don't know if he's blown smoke up my arse or what, but he said, "This is the best team of fans got togetherness that I've ever had." He said, "I've been in some teams, you know what I mean?" He said, "I've been at Blackburn," he said, "I've been at Wimbledon and all that." He said, but I, you know, this surpasses pretty much anything I've seen for you, the way you're getting on with each other and the way you fight for each other and stuff. He said, "It's absolutely superb." He said, "But you know what? It won't last." Like, why is that? He said, "Because money gets involved." He said, "Because players who play the way you do attract attention." And he said, "What happens is your head gets turned because you want the money, you want the, you know, not the money, that it's probably unfair to put the money as the first point. You want to progress on, you want to go to higher places, and with that comes, you know, money and everything else that comes with it, you know what I mean?" He said, it won't last, he said, "because people will start coming in and picking you off." And that's what happens. You know, Stephen Reid went, Lucas Neal went, Tim McHale went, you know, I left. You know, I wasn't maybe courted as much as they were, but I left. Like Richard Sadlier, who was going to go on to brilliant things, actually unfortunately got injured. Like, had a hip injury. Neil Harris, who's like the all-time top scorer for the club, got testicular cancer after the second year I was there, and that kind of just, I think, jaded them slightly. So, yeah, you know, you have these cycles, don't you, with football teams, I think. And I'm lucky enough, I was there when we had the crest of the wave. And then we kind of, quite a few of the main core players left. And then I think like the season after I left, they were still in the Championship, and then they got relegated the following season. Because I just think the players left and they just weren't wholly replaced.
I mean, you were there when, and you were injured, didn't you? You missed the FA Cup final in 2004 with injury, didn't you?
Yeah.
Although, did Dennis Wise was the manager, but then he insisted you got a medal, is that right?
He did, yeah. He did, because, you know, he'd won a couple of FA Cups already. He'd won it with Wimbledon, he'd won it with Chelsea. I think he recognised that the lads were such good lads. After the semi-final, at Old Trafford against Sunderland, he pulled me and Kevin Muscat, because we both had knee injuries. And he said, look, he said, I want you to lead us out in the FA Cup final. I want you to lead us out onto the pitch. Will you do that for us? And we were like, fucking hell, because you're injured, you feel like you're part of it, but you're not. And he said, I want you to do that for us. I'm like, yeah, defo, I'll definitely do it. So he said, I want the two. He's like, perfect, okay. So it was all agreed and all that. We, said we'd do it. So, it was going to be really nice, a nice gesture, I thought. And then when we got to Cardiff and that, Theo comes in, he goes, the FA have kiboshed it. Because he said, the FA said, only a manager can lead a team out in the FA Cup final. It's like, it's happened for the last 100 years or something. Mm-hmm. So, I think an FA delegate come over and was going to tell you what you do is, because at Cardiff, you go down, through the tunnel, then up the stairs, and then you're onto the pitch. And then what he was saying was, so really, theoretically, if you kind of come up from underneath the canopy and Dennis Wise takes one step out from underneath, like, say, the canopy leading up the stairs, he's actually led them out, and then you can flank him and come around and walk up. And like, that's, he has led them out in theory, but, in reality, you just see him walking away. So, right, okay, fine. So then, Wisey, we kind of lines up, me and Muscat are at the front, and then Wisey's kind of in the middle where he always stood, like, number 8 or whatever he was. And then the ref's going, like, Wisey? He's like, that, nah, mate, get on. Just get on with it. And then they go, no, but you got it, man, get on. So Wisey just kind of refused to walk up to the front, and Wisey just stayed where he was. So they're like, right, let's go. And we walked out. So there was, like, Alex Ferguson on one side. There was me and Muscat next, leading our team out. But I remember I'd had my knee operation a fair few weeks before Muscat. She was moving a bit slower than me, do you know what I mean? So I wasn't hanging around. So I thought, if it's just me and Alex walking outside, I don't care, do you know what I mean? let Muzzy hobble on behind us. So that's kind of how it turns out. So anyway, the game panned out the way it did. No, the lads made a good fist of it. But why is he? I was thinking, he just said, listen, so don't be walking into this game thing, you're going to get beat, you know what I mean? He said, you can beat these. That's where you've got to think, you can beat these. And I think he'd give us some examples of his crazy gang days. So that was that. Like, why is he going around, like, kind of grabbing everyone and like their plays. I think there's some pictures of him, like, grabbing, I think, Scholes or Ronaldo around the throat and like making his face, just thinking, right, I need to get any advantage against these, you know what I mean? But that was Wisey for you. And then when the result was kind of, the game had played out, Wisey said to me, he said, get up and get a medal. He said, because what happens is, he said, if you get one, bang it in your pocket, and then there's someone who is entitled to one and they haven't got one, they're going to have to find one for them. You know what I mean?
Yep.
He said, so just go up and grab one. So I did.
So you've got an FA Cup medal, and then pretty much
two.
Two.
I was at Liverpool when I went.
Oh, of course, yeah, Liverpool, yeah.
So both runners up, like, but yeah, better than a poke in the eye with a shitty stick.
So after, it was after that you then moved on to Cardiff. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. It was funny as well because why has he got married in the summer? And I've been speaking to Cardiff, and Wise was trying to get me to stay and stuff, but it's one thing or another. It was just kind of, they just weren't matching what Cardiff were matching, do you know what I mean? And, yeah, and I felt just a little bit more weight, but it was a dicey situation because I'd had a knee operation, so I wasn't due to be fit until like the 1st July. So I was kind of thinking it was a big gamble. So I remember being in Wisey's wedding. So we're in the reception. It was in the back of Wisey's house. He had this big boss drumming in London, like Surrey somewhere. This big lovely house, and he had like his marquee in the back and stuff. So we're all in this wedding and all that. So I turned around and fucking saw a man standing there, innit? And I'm thinking, oh no, he's like the chairman of Cardiff. And Theo Pathetis is there.
Uh-huh.
And Wisey's there. So I'm like, I'm half keeping my head down. So then the next minute, I'm standing there, and Theo's lad comes up to me and goes, my dad wants a word with you outside. So walks outside. Theo's there. Summer man's there, and Wisey's standing there, like, on the lawn. So I walks over, and they're all staring at me, and I'm thinking, oh, no, the cat's out the bag now, do you know what I mean? I'm going to Cardiff and that. So then Theo goes, so don't you be going to this Cardiff, you know? He goes in there. Like, they were kind of, obviously, knew each other, do you know what I mean? They kind of got on well and stuff, but yeah. I didn't realise that till afterwards. But he goes, see him there, he'll wreck your career, that summer man. And the summer man's going, ah, bollocks you. He goes, come to me, come to Cardiff, we're going places and all that, blah, blah, blah. And then he was, they actually put a wager on, right there and then. He said, like, we'll finish above you, no, we'll finish above you, you can use the crap and all that, blah, blah, blah. So that was that. So then Theo's going, like, what are you doing going there? I was going, Theo, it's another deal you offered me. He's going, yeah. I was going, well, he's like, he's giving me loads more. I said, I want to stay. But what they're offering me? I said, like, I'm 30 now. I've got a bust knee. Do you know what I mean? I said, like, it can't, you know, it doesn't, you know, it's common sense. I said, but I'd rather stay, but what can I do? So then the night went on for a bit longer. And I remember it was like kind of like late on. Everyone was a bit swallowed and that. I just remember going like to the portal outside, and me and Theo crossed again. He dragged me around the back of the portal. He went, listen, I'll give you an extra grand. I'll give you an extra grand appearance if you sign the deal. And I went, Theo, I can't. I said, like, that deal's dead. It's a good deal, do you know what I mean? I said, if you match it or you get close to it, I said, I'll stay. He goes, no. He said, what I'll do is I'll put it on your appearance because you've got a dodgy knee and all that. And then that was it then. He said, kind of like, let me know by tomorrow or something. And that was that. But it was funny, like, it was funny and wise at his wedding when he was getting chased by a couple of chairmen and told not to sign this and don't sign that. So that was funny.
Well, the good thing is you were wanted.
True, true. Yeah, you're dead right, yeah, I was wanted,
So, you know, there's a lot of football players who would love to be getting chased around somebody's wedding by a chairman saying sign for me or sign for me.
True, I know, yeah, you'd always getting chased out by bridesmaids, but, you know, chairman's a good second.
Exactly. So, you know, from then on, that's really when a lot of your career started to be some games at one club, some games at another. You did get to play in the top flight with Fulham.
Hey?
You did play some top flight football with Fulham.
I did, yeah. I did.
I can remember being quite taken aback, putting on the telly one day and thinking, it's Tony Warner playing for Fulham.
Yeah. Not as taken aback as me. I went to Cardiff and it just didn't pan out again. What happened was, I went there and you think you're ready, because even though I'd done my ankle a few years before, I'd actually fractured my patella, I had to get it drilled. And then you come in at Cardiff and they're going, right, okay, you know, he's on good money and all that, he's going to kind of oust these two keepers, blah, blah, blah. And then that was the first proper injury I'd had. And you think, I couldn't even kick the ball properly. And I can remember like playing some pre-season games and the fans getting me back. But the fans didn't like me too much because I had my debut for Millwall, which was 5 years before. They said I threw a bottle into the crowd and it's a fella. And I had to get arrested and taken to Cardiff. And the Cardiff fans were going, you know, like, you know, throwing bottles at fans, and it was like it was a bit of a mad game. It was the opening game of 1999, and we had Cardiff away. They were throwing bricks on our fans and all that. Like, we turned up after the game. We turned up in the changing room, and then all these women and all these kids, Millwall fans, all come into the changing room like straight after the game because they were getting pelted by bottles and bricks and all that. So it was, anyway, there was a bit of kind of media exposure about me. Throwing a bottle at the Cardiff fans, and then you go and sign for Cardiff, who were like, kind of, you know, they weren't the best of friends, the two teams. So there was that which was going against me, also my injury which was going against me, which I thought I could handle and I was over, but it wasn't. And then what you put in is you put in some poor performances, and then the fans are kind of like, we don't really like him anyway. And then he's not particularly playing well anyway. So I was getting a bit of stick off the fans. And it's so, do you know what? It just didn't work out. And it wasn't anyone's fault, really. I had an injury which I thought could carry off. Fans didn't really like me, but I can understand why they didn't, because I wasn't pulling any trees up at the time. You know, I had some good games there when I kind of settled down a bit. But then I think the chairman was trying to get Neil Alexander back in, which, you know, chairman kind of do. And then, anyway, it pans out where Neil finished the season playing in. And then we had the summer, and then Dave Jones turns up, and he went with Neil number one and me number two. So I think, right, okay, this isn't good. And so I remember the first couple of games, like the Prem starts off a week after the championship. Yeah. So we played on a Saturday, Neil was playing. Then we played on a Tuesday, and it was the Tuesday, I think it was the Tuesday, and my agent phoned me and he said, look, he said, Fulham want you. He said, you're playing Saturday if it all goes well. So I'm thinking, right, okay, God, tell you what, I'm despondent because I'm on the bench for Cardiff, but I'll be playing in the Prem on Saturday. Like, and I thought, I was 31. If you'd have asked me then, I thought the Prem was past me. Do you know what I mean? I thought, it's just not really going to happen where someone's going to come and take you out of Cardiff's, like, reserve, so to speak, and have you playing Premiership football. But it happens. So I went down to Fulham, and the trained really well, loved it. Again, really good bunch of lads. And then made my debut in the Prem for them against Birmingham at the Cottage. And I remember kind of just standing in the tunnel. I remember just looking down with the sign of the Prem badge on my arm. I'm thinking, fuck it, I made it, mate. And I was 31 then.
Yep.
But right, you know, a bit of a long journey, and you know, you took your kind of time getting there, but you're actually going to play a Prem game now. So this is what you've always been dreaming of. So, you know, I mean, like, I always kind of backed myself as being, you know, I was always confident of my own ability and all that, but I just thought the way my career had gone, that injury at the end and stuff, because I nearly went to Wolves the season before. I left Millwall, Wolves coming for me, but I got injured, and that put pay to that. So I was doing all right, you know what I mean? I was kind of getting noticed in that, thankfully. Then when I got injured and went to Cardiff, I thought, right, you know, it's done now. You know what I mean? You're 31 now, you're going to start kind of looking towards the end. So no, that happened, and that was just a brilliant opportunity.
So you'd agreed, I mean, you were in total, I mean, you had a couple of loan spells, but in total you were at Fulham for 3 years?
3 years, yeah.
So, and then obviously a couple of loan spells, and thereafter a couple of clubs obviously around for a couple of games to clubs. One of the things that really strikes me is you then went to, what age would you have been? So mid-30s, you were at you back up to Liverpool to Tranmere, yeah. for a season?
Half a season, yeah. Well, I'd stand on in January.
And then you went to New Zealand?
Yeah, well, what happened was I left Tranmere. And then my agent said, like, Blackburn are after you. Blackburn want to sign, because they're like number 2 or 3 or something. I thought, right, that'd be perfect. Especially after, you know, just kind of, I just thought at that time, that'd be perfect. I live at home and be at Blackburn. You know, it'd be good. So then they just wouldn't agree with me going in. I was going, I'm a signing on, I'm a not. And I spoke to the goalie coach and I said, look, I said, let me come in and train. He goes, don't really want to upset the lads who are in. I was going, well, What's wrong with upsetting people? Because I've been upset loads of times when they bring a keeper in. It's just the nature of football, you know what I mean? It's the way it is. So I said to the goalie coach, I said, look, I said, I don't know how this is panning out and that. I said, but I can't afford to be waiting, sitting on meet me backside for like 2-3 weeks. And then pre-season is coming towards the end. You know, season's like coming towards us. And then it doesn't happen. So because I'm not even saying anywhere, I said, you could send Peter Cech in 2 days before the first game of the season and he'll be crap because you need time, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I said, that's the position that I can't afford to be in. She goes, no, I won't do this, he won't do this, and all that. Anyway, it happens. He phoned me and said, oh, well, it didn't phone me because I couldn't get hold of him, but my agent phoned me one day and just said, look, they pulled the plug on it. They're not doing it now. So I'm thinking, the season's kicking off in 10 days. I haven't trained anywhere. I've been waiting on the promise of this Blackburn thing. So I was in a bad way, do you know what I mean? I'm thinking, like, it's like, you know, you've been at Tranmere and stuff. Like, you know, Blackburn will come in. Like, where are you going to go now? Because you can't even go in anywhere and say, look, I'm ready, you know what I mean? Yeah. So then, luckily enough, my mate Paul Eiffel was over in Wellington Phoenix. And I think a keeper got let go, or they only had one keeper. And he said, they're after the keeper, and I put your name forward, and they're going to phone you, and they want to sign you. And I'm like, right, okay. And the good thing was, really lucky, was that their season got put back a month because of the Rugby World Cup, which was in New Zealand. So they were using all the grounds. They were using our grounds, the Westpac, but we were in the A-League. But because we had our grounds was getting used, they put the whole league back by a month or 6 weeks. So we said, you can get over here and get a proper pre-season in, and you can get hit the ground run. I thought, right. So made the decision like within a day. And I thought, right, and then like within a few days, I was flying over there. And that was a nice experience because I took the family over there and stuff, and that was really good.
So following that, I was going to get onto what you're doing now, but one other thing, how did you end up in Malta?
Well, there was a chairman from Liverpool who had the club over there, and he asked me to go over and that, and went over there, and it was just a mess. Not getting paid, lads getting banned, for throwing games. Like, there was a lad who got banned, like for throwing games. A lot of it goes on in Malta because you have you're allowed so many pros, and then the rest of the lads are like kind of just, what's his name? No, just normal, like part-time lads. They work in the daytime. Like, yeah. We had a lift engineer. There's lads who were accountants and stuff. And then we all train for night time, playing a Saturday. So you got lads who were kind of, like, we were kind of relatively well paid and stuff. But you got lads who, it's kind of just like, they're not professionals. So what happens is you got a lot of lads who were throwing games, and you just see some unbelievable things going on. So you got that to contend with. I had to take the club to the tribunal because they didn't pay me for like 4 months, 5 months. So I went over there. It was a little bit of a mess, but what it was like a contact team with Liverpool, and that's why I went over there initially, but it just went a bit sour. But, lived in the med for a few months, so it wasn't all bad.
No, getting down to New Zealand, although you're playing in Australia for away games or whatever, and then up to the med in Malta. So what are you up to now?
I'm coaching at Bolton. I'm the academy goalkeeping coach at Bolton.
Interesting times at Bolton. You're picking an interesting clubs to go and play for.
I know, yeah. Don't take the easy options, do I? I'm at Bolton at the moment. Been here for probably 18 months or so now. I just deal with the academy goalkeepers, which is nice. It was good because it gives you a different. You realise that there's different goals. Not different goals, like. It's a different challenge because, you realise lads aren't kind of up to, first team standard, obviously. But they're trying to get there. And you've got to realise the lads' limitations. But, we got some really good lads there. That's what I'm doing. Just the academy stuff. I mean, I was at Blackpool before that. I was doing the first team goalkeeping coaching job at Blackpool. So that was my first... My first joins into coaching, and then you come down doing academy lads. So it just gives you different challenges, and it's just as challenging. Really enjoy it.
And your career, I mean, obviously from what you've just talked about, your favourite time was Millwall.
Yeah.
In all your career, who was the best manager you had?
I'd have to pick between a couple. Martin McGee was one.
Right, really?
Yeah, because he was just really thorough. He was so thorough with everything that he'd done. And he come in and we won the league. I know it was like they've won, but it's the only thing I've won in my career. So if he hadn't won that, I wouldn't have won nothing, you know what I mean? And I don't care who you are or where you are. If you're taking a year of your time to kind of try and achieve something, with all people trying to achieve something themselves, and you come out on top, I think it's a big achievement. And Mark McGee kind of, Mark McGee led all that. I remember just like when we were, it was kind of like, the final furlong of the season and stuff. And he kind of marked down the games. He goes, look, dead, like that's a win, you know what I mean? Like that's kind of, we might be able to afford to throw away one there, or not throw away, but that mightn't be a guarantee. Yeah. But he knew what we had. And he was very, very thorough. He brought in sports nutritionists and stuff, sorted out the fitness side of it. Was really like receptive to psychology and stuff. I'd say Mark McGee because, you know, he led us to the title. And then I'd probably say the other person who took over him was Dennis Wise, because what happened was Matt McGee brought him in as a player, and then they asked him to take over and McGee went. But if you just talk about team spirit with Wisey, he was brilliant, you know what I mean? He'd kind of, you know, and let's not forget how good a player he was. And that's when, and this is like when I suppose he's coming towards the end, was when he's with us. And I can remember seeing him getting out of his car, like when the first day he came into training, he had this big mech and he almost stepped down out of it. Because I thought, God, he's small, isn't he? but like, you know, considering he's seen, you know, throughout his career, he's a bit of an hard man. Like, he's going around rattling people, he won't shake out of a challenge and stuff and that. I thought, how can he be that kind of physically kind of, how can he be putting like your stamp on people all the time with as small as that? It just doesn't compute, you know what I mean? But then you see him in training, you see him in games, and you just see what Wise he's all about, do you know what I mean? He's fit as the butcher's dog, brilliant player, like runs games, like dictates everything, but then also when it comes to mixing it, Wise he's just not scared of anyone, and Wise he just throws himself around anyway, and he doesn't care, and he'll fight and scratch everybody, you know what I mean? So all of that rolled into one, and kind of oozing out of him into the lads in the changing rooms. It was superb. And then, like, it was Wise who got us the FA Cup final, you know, which is no mean feat.
Yep.
For a championships club. For me, when I was kind of really enjoying my football the most, was McGee and Wisey, I think, for different things to pair them.
Well, let me ask you then the opposite of that. You may not want to answer it. Who was the worst manager?
Oh, some fella in Malta, you probably never heard of him. some fella called Azapardi, he was a crackpot. He was just useless.
Right, okay.
I mean, if you can get hold of him, you can send him this. He was crap. he was an accountant, but he was just. Because what you'd have to do is in Malta, because it was so hot, everyone trained on ASO pitches at, from 6 o'clock, and I'd be training for 2.5 hours on an ASO pitch every night. And you're like, you're for real, mate, know what I mean? And they're like, tactically, we thought he knew everything, but he didn't. As a party, was a bad manager. But he also would have said, so I can't even think nearly anyone who you'd know.
So who was the best player you... Because I'm not going to ask played against, because you played with so many people, but who was the best player that you played with? Even in training or on the park, who was the best?
The ones that stand out for me are Fowler at Liverpool.
Yep.
He was just something else. Like, he'd destroy you, and especially as a goalkeeper, because you're at the sharp end of his tool, you know what I mean?
Yep.
He just destroyed you at times, and you think, God, how did he score from there, or how did that get past me? And so Fowler was like, he was like sharp as. I can remember just like training with John Barnes, and like John Barnes was just, he'd orchestrate everything, like whatever team he played in training would just always win, because he just organised all the time, like, and what a guy he was, you know what I mean? And I'd have to put Lubo Mravcek and Henrik in there, Henrik Larsson. I remember Lubo like training on the training ground, and it'd be muddy and stuff. He'd have his rubbers on, and he'd just be gliding through everything, and like half slipping, but just would retain the ball, like both feet. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
yeah. Like Lubo was superb. And then you got Henrik Larsson, who was just like, he's like a phenomenon, isn't he? Like breaks his leg and then comes back and scores all kinds of goals and that.
I remember having a debate with someone who wasn't a Celtic fan. In the sort of middle of Henrik's time at Celtic, and saying I wouldn't swap Larsson for any player in Europe, and this guy was saying that was nonsense. Yeah. And then Larsson left Celtic, and you know, I'm not saying he was in decline, but he certainly was. His peak age was while he was at Celtic, and yet he went to Barcelona and turned a Champions League final against Arsenal when he came on. So that to me sums it up, that I was right, that I wouldn't have swapped Henrik for any player in Europe.
Yeah, true, yeah. Henrik was just unreal, do you know what I mean? He was unreal. He was just a goal-scoring machine. He was just all in the right place. He was physically fit as well. Do you know what I mean? Like physically, he was in real good nick. I remember like seeing a cut of him. He's in bosh nick, really looked after himself. And yeah, he normally was. He was just a goal machine.
So one final question before we go.
Yeah.
Celtic are playing a new Rangers on Sunday.
Yeah.
I don't expect you to know ins and outs of either team, but what's your prediction for the score?
3-0 Celtic.
That's good enough for me.
Yeah, 3-0, why not?
Exactly. Mm. Well, Tony Warner, that's been great. That's been fantastic.
Thanks.
I'd like to thanks very much for your time. Do you want to tell people your Twitter name if anybody wants to follow you?
Oh, do you know what? I can't even think what it is. Is it bonus1_TW?
I think yes. @bonus1_TW. Quick question. Why?
By bonus?
Yeah.
That's my nickname.
Well,
my nickname is Bonus because I used to sit on the bench at Liverpool, get all the bonuses, and I used to even get, used to put my kit back in the bag because it was always spotless. And then after one particular game, I think in Europe, the lads were jumping around because things got into the UEFA Cup semi-final, and lads were jumping around, buzzing about the bonuses, and I was as well. And it was Mark Walters. He said, oh, hang on a minute. He goes, we're always kind of like pulling our finger out here. We're like diving on, getting kicked everywhere, getting the bonuses. And you get the bonus every week and you never, ever do anything for it. So that's your new name from now on, Bonus. And that was that, yeah. So it's stuck ever since. And just everybody calls me Bonus, like associated in football, Liverpool and stuff. I never get called Tony, just I always get called Bonus. So that's my nickname now, yeah, Bonus.
Okay, well, Bonus, it's been a bonus having you on the podcast and hopefully your 3-0 prediction will come true. So
hopefully.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
Nice one. Thanks a lot.
I think you'll agree that Tony Warner is sound as a pound. Excellent guy. There was another story he told me, but unfortunately it was after we stopped recording. It was before I could switch the recording back on, about going into a McDonald's shortly after his time at Celtic and ordering a Big Mac meal. And then also similar to the bottle story at the beginning, where the guy, when he went to pay, the guy just said 5-1 and walked away. Great guy, Tony. Really interesting to me that his three first best players that he'd seen were Fowler, Barnes and Lubo Maravcic, and he was only around Lubo for a very brief period of time. Also very interesting that very quickly into his time at Celtic, one day of reading the papers prior to a Celtic Rangers game, and he was able to identify that they're anti-Celtic. Anyway, enough of me. We've got the cup game coming up. As I said at the beginning of the podcast, we have an author of a new book in relation to the 30th anniversary of Pipping Hearts at the Post for the 86 league title. If you want to follow Tony on Twitter, his Twitter name is @bonus1_TW. That's bonus1_TW. Anyway, get yourselves onto the foundation website if you're around to be able to go to the Hearts anniversary dinner. That was Tony Warner. This is me, Harry Brady, saying God bless and good night. Good night.